Sports are often referred to as the great equalizer, but are they? When it comes to public school sports, there are many invisible obstacles that can keep kids off the court, and the growth of club sports is changing the landscape. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore the evolution of high school sports in Iowa and why we may see a lack of diversity on the field or court. I'll talk with Chris Cuellar and Bud Legg of the Iowa High School Athletic Association. Sarah Eichelberry of St. Ambrose University has researched equity in sports. I'll talk with her. And Tony Branch will be here, founder of the Youth Off-Road Riders in Iowa City and director of youth programs at the neighborhood centers of Johnson County. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This week on Iowa Public Radio, our news department and talk shows are collaborating to explore different issues in education. You can find out more about the series at iowapublicradio.org. This hour, we're going to take a look at school-based sports. We'll talk about how sports programs have changed and evolved, how the rise of club sports has changed the landscape, and also the barriers to participation that exist for many young people. We're starting the hour with Chris Cuellar. He's Communications Director for the Iowa High School Athletic Association. Hello, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Chris, Iowa ranks 19th in the country for total participation across all high school sports. What are some of the trends that you're seeing in recent years?
Well, if it's reassuring at all, Iowa is 19th in the nation for the 17th consecutive year for boys and girls across high school sports. So the trend nationally is slow growth in high school participation overall, with drops in football and volleyball a little bit. But we're seeing some other emerging sports kind of grow, and we're seeing that as well at the Iowa High School Athletic Association, at least on the boys' side of things.
All right. Well, and I realize that we have two separate organizations for boys and girls in the state of Iowa, but when you look at sports participation, does it seem to be steady for both boys and girls?
It really is at this point. Like I mentioned, outside of the drops that we are seeing in football and volleyball, the numbers are fairly stable, especially in some of the traditional sports that people know from across the state and value in their communities, your baseball, your basketball, your track and field, and even to an extent wrestling.
Iowa has become more diverse in the last couple of decades. Is that something that you track when you look at sports participation?
Unfortunately, we don't have a ton of demographic information when we survey our schools. And that's not even something that the National Federation has, where we send our participation statistics each year. But going to tournaments, going to events, you know, we do have a number of sports that do seem increasingly diverse, soccer, basketball, football, you know, maybe displaying a little bit of how Iowa's changing.
So let's talk about sports that seem to be growing. You said there's been a decline in football. Is that a significant decline?
It actually is. According to our data, which is 9th through 12th graders, boys participating in 11-player football, that total has dropped 25% since 2007. So fairly precipitous. Buoying it is slow growth in cross-country and soccer. And cross-country, of course, takes place in the fall, same time of year as football.
Okay, so we are seeing cross-country and soccer grow. Soccer, not necessarily a sport that's offered at all of the schools that you track, is it?
No, we are seeing quite a few co-ops in soccer, which I think is helping kind of grow teams gradually and in communities that may not have a strong club presence, you know, where they've traditionally been playing it for a very long time. Co-ops help that process, and so we've seen the sport grow with not just teams but in participants.
What is a co-op?
Multiple schools getting together with a host school, usually the major or centrally located school, serving as the team, you know, maybe name, mascot, coach. They'll provide the services in the fields, and other schools will join up with them in the area. It, of course, varies by sport. There are quite a few sports and activities that we have where communities are very proud of their programs, and they don't want to have a co-op and they'll hold off as long as they possibly can, and there are others that maybe they're more willing to do so.
All right, so when we see co-ops developing, I suspect that that's primarily in rural areas of Iowa?
Mostly, but then there are also small schools, you know, maybe on the fringes of the suburbs that that might do that. Consolidations and co-ops are definitely more common in rural areas, though, yes.
All right. You mentioned volleyball has declined some. What are the numbers on that?
Yeah, so that's a sport that's sanctioned by the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union, so not in our office. Mm-hmm. But, again, similar to football, it's down just over 10% in the last 5 years in terms of high school participation. So
that's really interesting. With football, there has been so much concern about concussions. And, you know, it seems to be a society-wide movement with concerns about football. So the decline there actually doesn't surprise me. The volleyball decline does surprise me.
Yeah, and that could be a number of contributing factors. I know club sports, which you'll mention later on in the program, is pointed to as maybe the primary driver behind that. But it just might be one of those activities that saw its heyday and is maybe coming on the trend down.
Well, let's talk a little bit about club sports. And I realize that's not something you specifically work with, but we do see an incredible increase in young people participating in club sports throughout the state of Iowa, whether that is soccer or baseball or softball or volleyball or basketball. I mean, all the sports seem to have these clubs that have developed. That's a system where a young person gets, you know, an opportunity to participate, but they also have to pay for that opportunity. And it can be a lot of money that people pay for that opportunity. These sports, some of them have gotten to be extremely competitive and high profile. How do you see that interacting with school sports?
Well, as far as, you know, some of our other activities that do have those club sports factoring in majorly, those are a lot of the teams and communities that we're seeing at our state tournaments. So at least on the athletic association side, that's kind of the primary driver there, where off-season baseball takes priority for a lot of kids and travel teams. You know, we're seeing a lot of those kids and their skills and abilities showing up at Principal Park for our state tournament. And the same kind of goes with soccer and basketball. Basketball has had a strong AAU presence for a number of decades, and a lot of those kids, especially in our bigger classes, are the ones that we're seeing show up. Whereas, you know, I know we mentioned the participation decline. Football is a sport that doesn't really have that club aspect, at least not past, you know, the extreme youth level, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, and that's the sport that's on the drop.
For many students, there can be barriers to participation when you're talking about co-ops. You know, those sports could take place a long way away from where a child lives or even where they go to school. Transportation can be a really significant barrier for students who may be in lower socioeconomic levels or just have working parents who can't transport them. Is that something you're concerned about?
Absolutely. But one of the driving motivators in our organization and for the educators, administrators, and coaches that participate with our sports, we think and we believe in their mission and that a lot of times they do a great job working around some of those socioeconomic factors, working with kids whose, you know, families can't afford for them to take the entire summer and go play a club sport, that they can't practice for, you know, those 2-a-days or 3-a-days that we used to see a long time ago. Those aren't financially feasible anymore. We hear constantly about our coaches doing a great job with that and our districts doing a great job with that, and we'd like to obviously continue to see that grow.
Are there rules with the Iowa High School Athletic Association that govern what public school coaches can participate in outside of their coaching at schools? I mean, we see a lot of coaches who also participate in these club sports. It's a great source of extra income for teachers and coaches that may not be making a whole lot of money, but I wonder how that impacts playing in the schools.
There's actually quite a bit of overlap between our, you know, the qualified individuals that end up becoming our head coaches or assistant coaches and, you know, some of those club sports in different communities. And then also officials. We see a lot of coaches of some of our sports. Maybe they'll coach a boys sport and officiate a girls sport or vice versa or a varied number of activities. As long as they're participating and abiding by, you know, kind of regular season policy and some of our board policy, they can overlap as much as they like.
Do you see any concerns there? I can imagine some parents thinking, well, and if my kid doesn't play in the club sport, then the coach isn't going to put him into play in the regular season.
Sometimes, you know, to be totally fair, you know, some of my background when I was a reporter was with soccer, and so I saw that very frequently, where a club coach would end up coming in and becoming the high school coach because they knew a lot of the kids. But sports, especially at the high school level, end up being something of a meritocracy. We hear some of those complaints in our office, but those tend to work themselves out at the school level, and you know, we like to promote and believe that our schools are following that mission.
Do you have programs that work to try to bring those opportunities to young people who are not participating right now?
That is one of our toughest and most constant promotional attempts, is just to get involved in something. And it doesn't have to be football or basketball or wrestling or any of these high-profile sports. We do offer some other sports that you know, maybe don't cater to the traditional jock or athlete, but most of all, we encourage just being involved in activities at your local school.
And what do you see as the benefits to that? Because I can imagine that with such an emphasis on academics, there are some people who think, well, maybe sports are just a distraction. What do you feel like the benefits are for students to participate in sports?
Research shows that students who are involved in sports and activities have better grades, have better attendance, more frequently attend college. There are endless positives to being involved at your local school.
And I've read that there's quite a bit of growth in Iowa in bowling. Tell me about bowling in high school athletics.
Yeah, so it's been going on for quite a while, but the sport itself used to be sanctioned or run by the Iowa Bowling Proprietors Association. We sanctioned it within the last decade, and actually on the boys and girls side of things, bowling is kind of one of our standout sports nationally. 25 states offer it at their high school athletic associations, and we rank sixth in terms of participation. So again, that's one of those activities that, you know, maybe isn't pulling in the traditional jock or star, but kids can excel and participate for their schools.
All right, so Iowa may be becoming a bowling powerhouse. And another, we talked about the decline in football, but you're seeing a rise in eight-player football. Tell me about that.
That is correct. Yeah. So smaller schools, when they've struggled to fill the gaps on those 11-player teams, even if they do have the co-ops or consolidations that we previously mentioned, have turned to eight-player football in the last 15 years or so. We've seen it grow steadily over the last 10 years, and actually nationally, there are, you know, 9-player and 6-player in other states, as well as 8-player, and those have grown as well. It still can't even come close to the amount of kids that play 11-player, you know, traditional football, but it is a positive sign for the sport.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Charity, my pleasure. Love listening.
Chris Cuellar is Communications Director for the Iowa High School Athletic Association. We'll talk a little bit more about Iowa High School athletics in rural schools later this hour. I'll talk with historian Bug Legg from the Iowa High School Athletic Association. Coming up next, though, we're going to focus on diversity in sports, what we are and are not seeing, and some of the things that can be done about it. We'll talk more in a moment. You're welcome to join the conversation with your observations and concerns and questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about school-based sports, and we're going to focus now on diversity or lack of diversity in our sports programs in our schools. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My next guest is Tony Branch. He is Director of Youth Programs at Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County. He's also the founder of the Youth Off-Road Riders in Johnson County. And Tony, I know that you've also been involved in being on a panel in Iowa City Schools talking about access to sporting opportunities. When you're listening to Chris talking about the big picture with Iowa High School athletics, what do you think we're missing in that picture?
I think one of the big things that I've seen that has been, you know, a limiting factor to a diverse audience access in sports, transportation being one of those things. I know it has its own challenges here in the Iowa City Community School District, in terms of, and they've made efforts to remove that barrier for a lot of students to be able to access the out-of-school time activities.
Right, but when we're talking about transportation, we're talking about, okay, you can't stay after school to mm-hmm. participate in a sport because you can't get a ride home. And I know, for example, in Waterloo, I know there are activities buses to try to overcome that issue. So that's an incredible challenge for a lot of young people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, and Iowa City has made an activity bus available to help with that. They piloted some things last fall, but there's still other barriers that are limiting the access to it. I know it, just from some of my interactions with folks in communities that we serve at neighborhood centers, you know, the sports physicals being one of those things, and we try to, you know, offer mobile health clinics. There's school clinics in the schools that kids can get physicals, but that always isn't communicated, and kids aren't accessing that in a timely manner to access the sport.
Right, because you can't participate unless you have that school physical.
Yeah.
And to a lot of people, that sounds like a very small thing, but it can be a real difficulty if you have limited insurance. But it can also be a real difficulty for students whose parents may not necessarily have a strong grasp of English or may not understand the system, right?
Yes, yes, certainly, certainly. That's certainly a factor in participation for a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm. So with the Iowa High School Athletic Association not being able to or tracking diversity, they're also not tracking socioeconomic diversity.
Yeah.
On these
yeah.
teams. So when I go to an athletic event, this is something personally I've observed in the Iowa City area. I look at the team and it doesn't look like the school population. But we also don't see the socioeconomic level when we look at that. So you feel like there are a lot of factors that are keeping kids who are part of that lower socioeconomic level out of sports?
Yeah. And I you know, we talked about the club sports. The previous guest talked about the mm-hmm. club sports being I think that's one big factor. I think with the specialization that we're seeing across sports that's becoming prevalent, I think that's leaving kids out because club sports are expensive. And if club sports aren't addressing that access issue as well, then the kids, especially when the club sports coaches are then the coaches in school, they're going to put on their teams who they're familiar with, kids that they know have the ability to excel and do well in their sport.
Right, and that they're comfortable with and
yeah,
have the relationship
yeah,
with, which
yeah.
is human.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's a little concerning for me. And I participated in club sports in high school. Again, I kind of started the specialization thing with track. Mm-hmm. But I didn't pay a club fee to be a part of my track program. It was anybody could access it. So the fees associated with that lead to the division.
There are also research studies that have been done looking at athletic participation in young people. One of the studies that I remember seeing showed that many girls had dropped out of participating in any kind of sports by the time they were in fifth or sixth grade. And I know that you work with a lot of students who are in elementary school mm-hmm. through your work with the neighborhood centers of Johnson County. What do we know about kids dropping out of that kind of activity in elementary school before these school sports are even offered?
Well, I don't think there's in elementary school, there's not a variety of sports mm-hmm. offered. Maybe the kid hasn't connected with something that they're interested in. I know Girls on the Run has a big presence in terms of that, but other than gym class in elementary ages, there isn't, you know, any kind of structured sports offering.
Right, and so if kids want to participate in teams in structured sports,
yeah.
again, that has to happen outside of school. So even if it's a very affordable program through a rec program or something like that, you still have those access problems
yeah.
where you don't have transportation,
yeah.
the knowledge to sign up, and other barriers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's efforts being made, especially at the Iowa City level. Rikisha Harrington, who's a former employee at Neighborhood Centers, is working to make that, you know, access to those things more readily available, and that's kind of her position at the city, as I understand it. So I'm hopeful that we'll see better participation from underserved communities. But again, it comes back to understanding the makeup of families and certain socioeconomic classes, where a parent's working long hours, maybe doesn't have transportation, and these are all factors that lead to to those students not being able to have the access to those activities. And we've done efforts along the way to help with that. James Mims, who was a former employee of us, he transported kids to baseball practices every baseball season.
Right.
And that was a huge help for parents that are working and don't have the transportation. And we look to do efforts like that, but our capacity is limited to be able to be the driving force for that.
Why does this worry you? I mean, we talked earlier with Chris a little bit about some of the benefits to participating in sports. Why are you concerned?
I'm concerned because if a kid doesn't have anything to connect with, they don't have an extracurricular activity, a passion, something that draws them to something positive, then they're more likely to be engaged in negative activities and negative behaviors. So that's why I see as important that these extracurricular opportunities are important for kids connecting. That was my story.
Tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, that was my story. I'd moved from Barbados to Canada to live with my sister. And, after school, I didn't have much to do. And I was the youngest in the household. And my siblings are much, much older than me. So it was a little bit of boredom. And, getting involved in sports created that connection for me, that social connection, that interaction with peers. I'm naturally a shy kid. And that was where I met all of my friends, my friends that are still my real good friends today, have been folks I met through sports.
Well, and when we see the academic, increased academic success often among young people who participate in sports, but I mean, that social aspect just cannot be overstated.
Yes, for sure. For sure. It can't be overstated. It's an important part of your development as a young person and those opportunities to develop that social network.
So you yourself, post-college, that track career, you started participating in competitive cycling,
yeah.
Which as an African-American man, you found yourself to be very much in the minority in the competitive cycling community.
Yeah, I would say for a long while as I, went to different events across the state, I think I was the only one. I know here in Iowa City, I had been maybe one of two. But showing up to group rides and showing up to different cycling events, being the only one. And that was striking to me. That's how the creation of the Youth Off-Road Rider Program started.
Right. And tell me about the Youth Off-Ride Rider Program, or Off-Road Rider Program. A little spoonerism there.
So it was part of, I think back when I started, Ragbri was coming through Coralville that year, and I had been working with a group of kids that had been doing a teen employment program, and we had volunteered to help with a setup, and they were surprised by the enormity of it all. They knew that I rode bikes, and they asked, is this normal? Is this typical? And they had a curiosity about the event, and I approached my director and asked, hey, maybe I should get a group of kids in Ragbri next year. And he said, well, you race bikes. Why don't you get them competitive cycling? And I just did some homework on it. And, kids had curiosity about it. And, I would be leaving from work, going on training rides or commuting to and from work. And kids were just curious about how far I was going and were surprised by the distances I was going. So I knew there was a curiosity there, but they had no concept of what this was all about. So I decided to start a program.
Well, and the barriers to entry in competitive cycling are very high as well. I mean, you've got to have the equipment, you've got to have the gear, you've got to have the transportation.
Yeah.
So I know that you wanted to make this an opportunity that was available to the kids that you were working with, kids that didn't have the money to spare to invest in this kind of equipment. How have you done it?
Through community support, really has been, and the community has been really passionate about helping this program grow and thrive. You know, Jeff's Bike and Ski, Jeff Peril at Jeff's Bike and Ski has been a huge supporter of this program, and he has allowed these kids to have access to a sport that can become a lifelong passion. We have new equipment that he's all contributed to this program. And all the bike shops, for that matter of fact, have all contributed in some way. He being the greatest of those contributors, but that's been helpful in having kids be able to access this sport that otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity to.
And you've got sort of two levels of participation, developmental level where the kids just really learn to ride and have a good time on the trails, and then the competitive level as well. How many kids do you work with each year?
This year we work with 20 kids total. In past years we've worked with anywhere from, you know, 10 to 30 kids in some level of cycling. And this year I've made a commitment. When we talk about diversifying the sport, when we talk about gender diversity in cycling too, that's another gap area where you aren't seeing as much female participation. And this summer, we did a girls-only bike camp and allowed girls to have their own space to become passionate about cycling. Not competitively, but just become passionate, have that camaraderie about riding and sharing that joy about riding and being on their bicycle.
What do you see as the payoff for the young people who participate in this program, and not necessarily the kids that really get into cycling? Because I know that you've had young people, you know, continue in cycling, learn to be bike mechanics, and really it's shaped their lives. But for the kids who maybe that's not their track, what do you see as the benefit?
The social aspect and what they can learn about. And when we talk about diversity, I look at it two-way. What they're bringing to the cycling community, but also what they can take away from the cycling community as well. Because they're getting to see communities outside of Iowa City when we travel, and an appreciation for, you know, this whole process of a global community. So I just want to build community within them. I want them to learn about themselves and what it takes, because cycling can be challenging, you know, riding up a hill for the first time. That can be challenging. And for them to overcome that and know, well, geez, I overcame that. I can overcome anything that comes my way in my future.
For people who, you know, don't have the kind of access that you do to kids who are encountering these barriers, to people who are sitting in the stands at sporting events at their schools and say, you know, just what I said, that, hey, this team doesn't reflect the diversity of the school. What kind of a difference can that parent in the stands make? What do you think people can do to facilitate more opportunities?
I think challenge what's happening. Look at it and act on something. You know, that's, in a sense, that's what I did with the bicycle program. I looked at it and I saw that there wasn't, you know, diversity. I was the only African American. And any way I can encourage kids to diversify this, and also from a socioeconomic standpoint, I knew that it was prohibitive. So how can I give access to those who don't have it? And you just start something, but you have to challenge it. Whether it's asking a question like, okay, why is this way? And asking, how can I get more kids involved? And I know Have Life Foundation, which is a contributor to our program and helps kids access, there's people out there that can help from that resource standpoint. So you just have to look outward and challenge those ideas.
We're talking about athletic participation this hour, focusing on school athletics and some of the barriers that students face to participation. Tony Branch is here with me, Director of Youth Programs at Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County and founder of the Youth Off-Road Riders. And I want to bring Sarah Eichelberry into the conversation as well, assistant professor at St. Ambrose University. She received her PhD in health and sports studies at the University of Iowa and has done a great deal of research about public sports. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we've got a break coming up, but I just want to get started. We have this idea that sports are the great equalizer. It's a search term that you can find a lot of hits for when you look it up. So let's look historically. Were sports the great equalizer?
Ooh, well, I think that the short answer to that is no. But, you know, sport, physical activity, and community-based athletics, they're very paradoxical in that they can be a tremendous source of joy for the participant in that moment, but it can also provide some of the most painful memories that people carry on with them for a very long time.
The painful memories, give me an example.
Oh, perhaps someone being teased or having their body shamed or, you know, wearing an ill-fitting, you know, physical education jumper or something of that nature. And there was actually just recently a really great study that came out of the kinesiology department at Iowa State that was using social scientific methods to link people's attitudes, current attitudes about physical education, to some of their earliest experiences in their PE classes.
Very interesting. And we do have a break here, but we're going to talk a lot more about this in just a moment. Sarah Eichelberry is here with me, assistant professor at St. Ambrose University, and has done a great deal of research in public sports. Also, we have Tony Branch with us, director of youth programs at the Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County, and you're welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Also, coming up a little bit later on the program, Bud Legg will be here, historian for the Iowa High School Athletic Association. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're taking a look at school athletics, public school athletics, barriers to entry, and how sports have evolved in our schools over time. You're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tony Branch is here, director of youth programs at Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County, also the founder of the Youth Off-Road Riders, and Sarah Eichelberry, assistant professor at St. Ambrose University. And Sarah, I asked you a huge question right before the break without much time to answer it. But let's talk a little bit about the relationship between physical education and sports. I mean, physical education in schools was something of a revolutionary idea early in the 20th century or so. So let's talk about how that developed over time.
Absolutely. And really, any time that we look at the development of PE or sport in our public education system or our private education system, it's important to know that that story has always been impacted by a person's social location. So age, race, gender, and ability definitely play a part of that story, just like the personal story and that Tony was speaking to earlier. But, you know, at the turn of the century, we started to see physical education and particularly the use of sport creeping into public education, particularly for school-aged boys. But by World War I, we start to see a shift where only three states in the nation required physical education for school-aged children. And after World War I, we saw that jump up to about 28 states within that decade thereafter.
Oh, fascinating. So then, obviously, we did see that change again
Yes.
over time.
Yes. So definitely those kinds of changes increased. So as Americans were like more broadly gaining access to public education, what was very, very influential at that time were, you know, different schools of philosophy like pragmatism and progressive era thought that really emphasized different like notions of health and educating the whole student, which included the mind and the body.
I think we should do a whole show about the evolution of physical education in schools. So that's on the agenda for some time in the future. But
Sounds
let's talk
great.
About the relationship with PE and varsity sports, because, I mean, that was really a challenge for PE teachers to not have that kind of program take a backseat to those varsity sports, right?
That is absolutely true. You know, so physical education historically has been a kind of a sex-segregated enterprise, with the exception of maybe like very young students that were in racially segregated primary schools. But Yes, most physical educators at the turn of the century and still today are really large proponents of mass play, trying to get as many students involved as possible and not necessarily deeply specializing at an early age. But as public schools developed and different, political forces started to kind of take shape at the more local or state level, physical educators, male and female, utilized different strategies to attempt to kind of like keep the resources that they had for their students. So we saw men's physical educators absolutely fight probably a toothier battle with varsity sports and the rise of coaches. Women physical educators were able to kind of keep a handle on sports and physical activity for girls and women because they had there were less resources being generated that way to begin with, and there was less of a national spotlight on them, particularly in the 1920s and 30s when our mass consumer culture was focusing so much energy on men's professional and elite sports.
Right. Well, and we have, of course, with Title IX, we've seen changes in the emphasis on sports for young women and sports for young men. But I can still see that push and pull in our school districts today because, of course, schools want to win.
Yes.
So the idea that they want sports and physical activity to be available for all their students is in conflict with that. We want just the best athletes on our teams.
That's true. And that is a tension, and it's probably never going to go away. But then we do see schools, particularly like large urban areas like New York City 10 years ago, adding sports or adding activities, at least at the municipal level, to include and wrap in more students. And in 2008, they added things like speed and double Dutch speed jump roping to try to capture more low-income girls and girls of color that were already participating in that at the community level.
As we've seen things evolve, do you feel from your research that enough thought has been given to opening those doors, breaking down those barriers?
Well, so, if we look at high school girls, there's been almost a 1,000% increase in participation for high school students between 1972 and 2012. So that's really great. And there's very similar levels at the college too, for women athletes. I think that we're kind of starting to hit a saturation point, though, at least in terms of the types of sports that communities or states are able to support or willing to add. I think that, if you look at where a majority of women and girls of color kind of tend to land in terms of the sports being added, the new sports that are being added at the college level, I could use my own institution as an example, or like swimming and diving or lacrosse, are not necessarily a large part of those types of girls' early experiences like Tony was speaking to.
I want to get to the phones. Carrie is on the line in Marshalltown with a comment. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
What would you like to share?
In Marshalltown, we have something called the Marshalltown Youth Foundation. Some leaders of our community wanted to help kids get involved in activities because we learned through studies done by an institute that the number one predictor of success after high school was participation in activities. So a group of people got together to raise money and try to remove the barriers that the kids had. Of course, part of it is financial, and that's the easy part. You can always raise money, and people are always willing to help. But a bigger problem is transportation. We used to have AmeriCorps workers who would help with that, and we still struggle with ways to find transportation. But we do have this foundation and pay for kids when their families can't pay for it. We also have developed a musical instrument lending library so that not only are kids allowed to be in or helped to be in sports, they're also helped in the in-school time when there's our fabulous band program and doesn't require transportation, and they then are allowed to borrow instruments to be a part of a band program that teaches, everyone knows how great music is for kids and their development. And we have also partnered now with our local community theater for theater camps, their art camps. We have a whole bunch of different things that kids have taken advantage of, and we are happy to be able to support that.
Well, it sounds like you're doing some really incredible work, Carrie. How long has the foundation been in place?
We started in 1994.
Wow. And do you have an idea of how many kids you have an opportunity to interact with each year?
Yeah, annually it's several hundred. And we always struggle with budget, trying to raise the money to do this and trying to get the word out to new families. We have a lot of immigrants in our community, and getting the word out as to where to get the help and how to sign on is always a struggle. We have a lot of new languages in Marshalltown, and so it's a constant rearranging of how we offer things and how to get the word out to families and parents. And, of course, transportation, as you've already noted, is a big problem.
Have you had people from other communities coming to you to ask how to do the same thing?
No, we have not.
Our well, music maybe you will now.
Right. Our music teachers report on our musical instrument lending library around the state. And once in a while we get a question about that, but not too often.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experiences with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So Carrie was telling us about the Marshalltown Youth Foundation breaking down some of those barriers. I want to bring Bud Legg into the conversation as well. Bud Legg is with the Iowa High School Athletic Association, and he's officially retired now, but he spent more than 36 years as a coach and athletic director in Iowa schools and 17 years with the Iowa High School Athletic Association. Bud, hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we've talked a lot about barriers to participation for a lot of young people in urban areas. But I want to talk with you a little bit about what we've seen changing in the rural areas of Iowa, because we're seeing enrollment increase in our urban districts. We're seeing enrollment decrease pretty dramatically in our rural districts, right?
Well, that's true, and the numbers don't lie. Overall, Iowa has a rich history of participation for kids and school activities, but about 57% of our schools have 200 or fewer students. So that's a number that's been increasing. Well, in the 17 and a half years that I've been here at the Athletic Association. So it does become a concern in that maybe some of our smaller schools, if they stay open and they stay viable to their communities, they may not be able to have the number of opportunities within a sport or the number of sports that they've had before. It used to be, I know when I started coaching and teaching in the mid-1960s, you can just about guarantee that every school that had football or basketball not only had a varsity team, but they had a JV team, they had a sophomore team, and oftentimes a freshman team just at the high school level. So I think Chris addressed something pretty well when he talked about the co-ops and the sharing programs that we have, which has allowed kids opportunities to play.
Well, and I was asking Chris about this too, but that has to be incredibly challenging for families when you've got to travel 30, 40 miles for your kid to participate in a sport.
Are you talking practice or are you talking games?
Practice. Just practice.
That doesn't happen too often at the small school level that you have those kind of travel distances, but if there are, schools usually provide an activity bus to get those kids from one site to another. I know part of my duties when I started coaching was not only to have the practice, but to drive the activity bus, taking these kids back to their attendance center or the community that they were from, and I'm addressing primarily South Hamilton, and to give you an idea, we'd take that activity bus after high school and we kind of make the loop in the district. We go to Ellsworth and take the kids down to Randall and then cut over to Stanhope and then back to Jewell. So that type of thing has been going on for a long time.
When you were coaching, what do you think your biggest challenges were as far as inviting kids into the program and making sure that kids had access?
Well, philosophically, I felt that everybody that wanted to play a sport should have the opportunity, and I was fortunate enough to have school boards and administrators that supported that philosophy. The problem comes in that if you can have a JV team, a freshman team, a sophomore team, how to schedule all those sports when maybe the schools that you're used to competing against doesn't have the same philosophy, or they don't have the same numbers, and declining enrollment took care of a lot of those schools having to drop maybe a freshman team and combine it into a JV team or combine them with the sophomores. So the school people are pretty creative at being able to handle their own needs and to address it, and not only at their level, but at their conference level.
Given that you've had experience in many different communities around the state, I mean, we've seen the rise and fall of some terrific athletic programs over the years, not necessarily dependent on population. But, I mean, what do you think makes for a successful program beyond what's going on at the school? What do you think makes a program successful?
Well, obviously community support, whether you want to transfer that to attendance or whether you want to say the booster clubs that get involved that help the schools buy uniforms or help with kids getting to games with pep buses and what have you. The booster clubs in Iowa and predominantly at the smaller level are doing a tremendous job of helping the school out in those activities. So I think that has to be first and foremost on it. And I think it's also one of the things that you have to remember is that probably in 55 to 60% of our communities, maybe even more, that what happens at the high school or what happens at the school level, whether it's a band concert, a school play, an athletic event, any other fine arts type of thing, that is the entertainment for a lot of those communities. You know, that may have one time might have had a movie theater or a bowling alley or something. They just don't have those types of things anymore. So it's what the school furnishes that becomes the entertainment for the people in those towns.
So, Bud, from your perspective, if a parent is concerned about lack of participation in their district, what should they do?
Well, I think they need to probably visit with the school's activities director first and foremost, and in some schools, that's also the principal, and if that can't be addressed at that level, then I think that they need to take a look, and probably if participation is one thing, if a kid's being denied not getting to practice or not being able to be at practice, or whether their playing time is an issue. Those are things that need to be addressed where the rubber meets the road with the activities director or the coach.
Well, Bud Legg, thank you so much for talking with us today.
You bet.
Bud Legg, historian for the Iowa High School Athletic Association, officially retired since June, but obviously still very knowledgeable about these topics. And we are out of time for this hour, but I do want to say thank you, Tony Branch, for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Tony Branch, Director of Youth Programs at Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County and founder of the Youth Off-Road Riders Program. And Sarah Eichelberry, thank you.
My pleasure.
Sarah Eichelberry, Assistant Professor at St. Ambrose University. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.